For, so again, in stratum three, the deduction is going to be the lesser of 20% of the QBI or the greater of 50% of the wages, or 25% of the wages plus 2.5% of the UBIA, that's unadjusted basis immediately after acquisition of the property. Now, there's a handy little calculation that I came across in all my readings on 199A, which basically says that the only time you're gonna use the alternate calculation is if the unadjusted basis exceeds 10 times the wages there, and that's proved by the algebraic formula there, which makes me cringe when I think back to my high school math days. But that's handy to have when you're talking about clients or advisors. So I think what I want to do then, when I look at planning with clients who are in partnerships or S-Corps, I think want to kind of more broadly and talk about what is the overall compensation strategy for the owner employees and how does 199A impact that. So, you know, we're at now a 37% top ordinary rate, and we've got capital gain or dividends are at the 20% rate. So we've got still a pretty good spread there. So I think there's a lot of incentive to convert what might otherwise be compensatory income into capital gain, and that's, you know, we see that quite a bit with the use of partnerships and preferred or profits or carried interests issued to principals who are involved in the partnership there. You know, wages are also going to be subject to FICA, which has both the Social Security and the Medicare component, and the Social Security component is capped each year, and it goes up. I think for 2019, it was 132.9, and so you're going to have both the employer and employee portion are going to get hit with 6.2%, so it's 12.4 combined. And then the total wages are subject to Medicare tax at 145 each for employer and employee, 2.9% combined, and that is uncapped. I think that came in 93, and now we also have an additional 0.9% Medicare tax on employees whose wages are in excess of $200,000. I believe that came in with part of the health care legislation to help pay for that. So I think there is a lot of, you know, incentive to minimize compensatory income to limit that, what would be subject to those, especially the uncapped Medicare portion. You know, the corollary to that on the wages, which is going to apply to S-Corp shareholders, also if you're a C-Corp employee, are net earnings from self-employment. And this is going to be applied to sole proprietors. It's also going to apply to if you have partners, if you operate in a general partnership, if you receive a guaranteed payment for services to a limited partnership, and likely going to apply to most members in a limited liability company. And again, we have the same numbers here. We're going to have the same limitations here. The only saving grace for a self-employed individual or someone being subject to the SECA tax is that they only pay income tax on 92.35% of their net earnings from self-employment. And that's intended to mimic the FICA portion of the employer portion of FICA there. So if I'm getting a W-2 from an employer, I'm not having to pay that employer portion of FICA. So we're trying to put, so the intent here is to put self-employed individuals on the same footing there. Now, turning back to S corporations, I think historically S corporations have been preferable for folks looking to minimize compensatory income. A shareholder employee can receive a W-2 wages, which are going to be subject to FICA. And it's clear under Section 1402 that the distributions, a K-1 to a shareholder employee reporting his or her distributive share of income, is not subject to self-employment income tax. So again, when we look at the uncapped portion of the FICA tax liability, it can be incentive for shareholder employees to limit the amount of compensation that they receive. The other thing to contend with is the net investment income tax, which I think was effective in 2013. And that applies if you're over a married couple, you've got income over $250,000, or a single taxpayer over $200,000, and that's going to apply to certain investment income you have. Well, if you're a shareholder in an S corporation and you're an employee, you're going to be able to take the position that you're actively participating, so that distributive share is not going to be subject to the net investment income tax. You can also take that position for the 469 passive loss rules. So again, with S corporations, for those looking to minimize their compensatory income and limit overall tax liability, I think S corporations are a potentially good choice for just that. There's a lot of other things that go into the choice of entity. So then we turn to partnerships. And one of the big differences between partnerships and S-corps, and you know, I think a lot of folks that are not tax professionals, I think, conflate and they say, oh yeah, partnerships tax just like an S-corp or vice versa. There's actually a lot of differences. And one of the big ones here is that for income tax purposes, a partner cannot be treated as an employee. So a partner cannot be receiving W-2 wages from a partnership. And this seems to sometimes come as a surprise, sometimes when we meet with new clients, that they've operated as an LLC, they pay W-2 wages out and have to explain to them, no, you can't.